I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
Hi there. Welcome to a brand new episode of Against All Odds, an HT Smartcast original, with me, Bose. This show is about extraordinary individuals who have survived impossible challenges. Eventually, they have reached where they wanted to. This show is about passion and persistence.
HT Smartcast.
You are listening to an HT Smartcast original.
Hi, I'm HD Smartcast, and I hope you're safe and well. Your episode is about to begin. But just a small message of solidarity before that. In difficult times like these, living in isolation isn't going to be easy. But what if working from home, our own comfort zones, helps us discover new ways of being? What if this calm, this rest, it helps us listen to ourselves and the people around us more deeply. While that happens, you can find me at htsmartcast.com, connecting you to the world of comedy, culture, motivation, news, you know, just in case you need some smart company. Thanks for listening. Take care.
Today I bring to you Anjali Bhimani, the American stage, film, TV and voice actress. She has had an extraordinary career that started with theatre and crossed paths with some of the most well-known names in the film industry. What amazes me is her ability to carry her entire person, a seasoned, anchored person, beneath the contagious enthusiasm of a child, a state of mind that can only be earned. Anjali's parents were physicians who occasionally took to the stage as amateur artists. And that didn't go unnoticed. She took to theatre early in her school.
Because, you know, growing up, most of my Indian friends did not have parents who necessarily thought of the arts as a viable option. I mean, I don't even know that my parents completely did. I know my father absolutely had a love for the stage and never let that go for as long as he was on this earth. He was still reading scripts up until, you know, the last year he was here on earth. But I don't know that they really thought of it as a viable career until they saw me really wanting to do that. And I was so lucky that they had an appreciation of the arts and a trust in me enough to say, okay, we're going to look into this too. If she's in love with theater, we're going to make sure, we're going to go as a family to go see theater.
She had a highly disciplined life in school. How did she manage the regular distractions of a young girl growing up? And later, the urge to rebel as a teen.
I didn't have to fight distraction because the thing I was choosing to do involved so much imagination and so much creativity. The thing that I wanted to do that required this amount of discipline was also so gratifying at the same time, you know, that it almost felt like I didn't really need to rebel. I didn't need to. My rebellion, quote unquote, was being an actor, you know, like that alone. And it wasn't really a rebellion because it was something that my parents were cool with. And so because I felt like I was being treated as an equal and that everything was my choice for the most part, I was able to make choices. And because I was given the freedom and the responsibility of making those choices, I took that seriously.
She later went to the Northwestern University to pursue theater. How were her aspirations building up?
So my aspirations weren't lofty. They were literally just to be a stage actor wherever they would let me be a stage actor where I could make a living. And I assumed for that would be regional theater, which, you know, in America, regional theater is basically you go around to different states and there are these lovely theaters that have seasons and you perform in a play for a couple of months, 4 months, whatever, and then you'd move on to something else. And I was pretty sure that was going to be my existence. I would just go from play to play to play. So that was my general idea of that, of what success would mean for me. Because you're told in so many ways, oh, well, if you're going to be an actor, you're going to be broke, or the starving artist, or all of these awful things, all of these things that, you know, these ideas that we're told when we go into a field such as acting. So I joke that one of my mottos has always been success through lowered expectations, because then I'm always pleasantly surprised when things go better. But it's actually served me too. It's given me a chance to achieve things above what I thought were possible and then relish that, rather than aiming so high and being constantly disappointed if I don't get there. I've been able to surprise myself. And so coming out of Northwestern, I definitely thought, okay, I'm going to be doing stage acting. That's going to be my main thing. And then there was one big shift in my artistic journey that happened at the end of college. So when I was in college, in addition to being an actress and being in the music theater program there as well, I discovered dancing. I mean, I had been dancing a little bit in high school, but I really dove into it when I was in college. And I was dancing up to 6 hours a day, and I was dancing with a company, and I was doing all sorts of stuff. And then right after I graduated, I was in a rehearsal and had an accident, and my knee bent sideways, and that was that. And I was out. I couldn't walk for a month, and then I was in a full leg brace for about 6 months. And I thought for sure, oh my God, this dance was so important to me. What am I gonna do? I'm never gonna feel that again. I'm not gonna be able to do that. But the wonderful thing about it was, it kind of redirected me back to what my original passion was, which was theater. And the very first audition I did after I could finally walk again was for a woman named Mary Zimmerman, and doing a play at the Goodman Theater with her called Mirror of the Invisible World, and I got it. And it led to this incredible, amazing friendship and collaboration. We've known each other for over 20 years. We've done, I think, 18 productions together. And that redirection wouldn't have happened if I hadn't had the rug pulled out from under me, so to speak, from what I thought I should be doing.
What were her struggles as an actor thereafter?
So much also of the struggle of being an actor comes in the in-between times. You know, it's not the actual job. The job is actually sort of the reward for all of the time that you're struggling, or all of the time that you're hustling to try to get the next job, or all the auditions that you're doing and preparing and not getting it. And there were definitely periods after that first show where I went through that, you know, long periods of auditioning for a lot of things and not necessarily getting it. And as an actor, every single actor runs into this, you know, being told that you're too tall, too short, too this, too that, too whatever it is for that role. And it starts to eat away at you, and you have to really stand in your, you know, find some way to keep your confidence in yourself and not take it personally. That is definitely something that I have struggled with through the years, is separating the person from the product when it comes to myself.
How was she training to stay away from pressure, literally called performance pressure? This is something that every professional struggles with in almost every field.
The most valuable thing that I think I've discovered in the last 10 years is that when I come to any kind of audition or performance from a place of giving, or from a place of wanting to be of service, or a place of wanting to share, rather than a place of wanting to be what someone else wants me to be, when I'm able to come to anything, any performance with a sense of, this is what I have to offer you, which is funny since my name is Anjali and, you know, the meaning of it is not lost on me, but this is what I have to offer you as a tribute. This is what I have to offer you as an audience. This is this valuable thing that I have to offer you. And I am it's no better than anyone else's, but it is unique because it's mine and I want to give it to you. Coming at things from that place has been a big shift in how I have seen acting in general. And when we're putting so much pressure on ourselves to be anything, it is definitely more liable to make us more focused on ourselves, right? It seems so odd. It seems that if you're insecure, you would be thinking about everything but yourself. But ultimately, the more insecure you are, the more all you're thinking about is who's looking at me? Do they think this of me? What do they think of me? Rather than what can I do for you? Right? So that's been very, very valuable to me. And I think it's something that we can all do in our lives, whether you're an artist or a doctor or a businessman or whatever, is to open yourself up to the possibility of sharing that energy with someone else rather than trying to impose something on them or get something from them.
How important is a diverse set of experiences in one's life?
Whatever you learn is going to feed the thing you are doing. You know, if my rock climbing has fed my acting in ways that I never expected it to. And so being a more, I don't want to say well-rounded individual, because it's not just about well-rounded, but just it's sort of like diversifying your investments. If you diversify the investment of your time and of yourself, your rewards can be incrementally better, because when one thing might not be as satisfying, something else is. And I'm also very lucky in that, you know, some people prefer to specialize as actors, and a lot of people do incredibly well like that. I have decided that I just want to tell stories in any way that they will let me. And so I'll sing, I will dance, I'll do opera, I'll do voiceover work, I'll do whatever, you know, I always say whatever they pay me to do that's legal, because it's a chance to do this beautiful thing in so many different ways that I'm just open to all of it. I love all of the branches of the tree.
How does this help her in handling anxiety after an audition? That's like a big client meeting or a job interview for a professional.
You know, when you put so much importance on something and then, you know, after an audition, the immediate desire after you finish, or at least for me, the immediate desire after I finish an audition is to start second guessing every single thing I did in the room. And what did, you know, he raised his eyebrow. What did that mean? And like you start getting so messed up in your head. So I make sure that there is something to do, whether it's have lunch with a friend or take a meeting or go for a workout. There's got to be something else to do. Again, this idea of diversifying your energy and your day so that there is no one thing that will make or break that experience, whether it's the day or the hour or the whatever. And also, I have learned from experience that I really have no idea whether I have booked a job or not. For the most part, when I leave a room, there have been times I have left an audition room and run to the car to get there before I burst into tears about how bad I thought I was, and then booked the job. And then there are other times I thought I was great and then I didn't. So because I have no concept of that, I'd really rather just eliminate the option of second guessing until I find out whether I got the job or not. So yes, always follow it up with something else.
In the next episode, we join Anjali back in her journey, her foray into films, voice acting, and her superhero character, Symmetra, in the raging video game Overwatch. What makes her the most popular character in a community of over 60 million players worldwide? That's it from me. If you know of more such people who have inspired you and wish that I talk about them, do reach out to me at Bose for Leadership. That is Bose numeric for Leadership at Twitter and Instagram, and Shubham Basu on LinkedIn. Alternatively, you can look for the handle at HTSmartcast on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. The podcast is available on Spotify, JioSaavn, Google, and all your favorite podcasting apps. I will be back next week with a brand new story.
This was an HT Smartcast original.
HT Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.